Well, hey, cousins, you are listening to Revolutionary Hood Rat with Kim Young of Dope Black Social Worker, and welcome back. We are a day late, 2 weeks behind, but never denied. Never denied. I definitely said, let me make some time to record an episode because I wasn't able to do it last week. I forgot why, but also I don't need a good reason. The reason could just be I didn't want to. I didn't have the energy or I was tired. But here we are. Like I said, a day late, but we're about to get it done. So let's go ahead and jump right into revolutionary news for the week. And it should come as no surprise that revolutionary news for the week goes out to the San Diego Chargers, also known as the Los Angeles Chargers, because baby, week one of football season, of sports ball season, we beat the Raiders. And it was absolutely necessary for that to happen, because if anybody follow sports ball and you happen to come across the game last season where the Raiders ate our ass out, it was like 63-10. Baby, we had to win. Anybody that, you know, is in the world of sports had to, like, we had to win. There was no way that we can come back from the offseason, from training camp with a new team, with a new coach, an energized quarterback, a solid defense, for us not to come out there and show our ass and win that game. And so even though it's untraditional revolutionary news, shit, it goes out to the Chargers this week because we also are 2-0 this season. I ain't trying to toot no horn too soon because history tells me the Chargers will start the season off good. And by the time, like, week 7, week 8, you'd be like, well, goddamn, what didn't happen? So we're going to keep it, you know, keep it cute right now. But nonetheless, we're going to celebrate the victory against the Raiders. And I look forward to the rematch in January of 2025 when the Chargers go to Vegas for that game, because your girl's going to be in attendance. And I'm going to show my whole ass wearing my blue and my gold. And I absolutely cannot wait. So shout out to the Chargers and all the sports ball players this season. Just really hoping for and sending all the good energy and vibes for a healthy season for everybody that's on the field, off the field, playing all the sports at every single level. Because my word, I wish a healthy season to all that engage in a contact sport. All right, let's get into Earth is Ghetto for the week. I got an update. So I don't know if I mentioned it here, maybe I mentioned it on Instagram, but I wanted to bring some guests in to have a conversation about the social work board's exam data reports that they released, last month sometime. So that 3-part series data report. So yes, I'm going to be able to bring in Jen and Matt, who are well-versed in this area, especially Matt. Like, he's a damn savant. Matt DiCarlo, in this particular area of like testing and the ASWB, and he's been following and tracking legislation that's happened across the country, but then he is brilliant. And so he'll be on the podcast, and then Jen, they're going to pop in as well to have a really dope conversation about the social work examination process, the legislative action that is happening across the country, the bullshit that the ASWB be on, and really helping all of us in this work regain our imagination to dream of something else beyond the ASWB exam, because we have to recognize that it has not always been this way. So it does not have to stay this way. It is okay to dream. It is okay to create. It is okay to build consensus, to put something new in place that is more equitable for those to gain access to licensure in the field of social work. And so that conversation, we're going to record it in October and then plan to release it maybe like the second or third week in October. I'm really excited about that. Also, update, y'all know I popped outside this past weekend. Oh shit, that's why I didn't record an episode. Your cousin was at CBC. I was showing my ass at CBC. So for those that are not aware, CBC is the Congressional Black Caucus. And yeah, you know, pivot. I have some philosophical and moral issues with the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation. They have actually been involved in lobbying some really critical pieces of legislation that have actually brought harm to Black bodies. And I'm not sure how many folks are aware of that. So I do have some philosophical and moral issues with the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation. So CBCF. However, when it comes to CBC weekend, in my mind, I really frame that as an opportunity to go and be in community with Black folks that are engaged in civic work, social work, justice, and liberation-rooted work, and also to party. Because people who do justice and politics and all that type of work, baby, we need to have a good time too. And so CBC weekend really allows for that to happen. There's places for learning, places to engage, also places to do hood rat things with your friends all throughout DC. And it typically is like in the second or third week of September. So if anybody is like, yo, I need to go see what CBC weekend is about, I highly encourage you to look into next year, like popping out to DC for CBC weekend in September, because it's going to be a time. You're going to run into people that maybe you haven't seen in a very long time, like I did. You might see some familiar faces. You'll meet some new people, gain some new information, new relationships. But then also you get to release the fabrics and give the people a look, because there's so many galas and parties and happy hours and everything that you can imagine to have a good ass Black time around people that you may or may not be like-minded with. CBC can offer that to you. And so I was certainly up there, only was able to give it a solid 24 hours of my time because I had to get back home to life, because I have a lot of things happening right now. So I had to get back home to life. But within those 24 hours, I ran into people that I went to undergrad with back at San Jose State University that I had not seen in well over a decade. And was like, oh my goodness, look at you. You're here. How did you know I was homesick and I needed this energy? And so being able to run into folks is really good. Also, like hopping around to the parties was also a good time. I went to the Black party where they said Black attire was highly encouraged, but I didn't wear no goddamn Black, because why? I can't stand no dress code. I damn sure can't really stand no all Black party, because Black people look beautiful in all kind of colors and prints. So why you got us all wearing Black? So I wore a bright ass orange dress with a bright red hat and gold accessories, because yes, we gonna let the melanin pop in a color. We're not gonna fade into the background by wearing Black. This is wild. And so, you know, definitely got my little high fives. One of the cousins came up to me and was like, can I just give you a high five? Because you said, fuck wearing all Black. I think she was having a good time. She was off that, you know, complimentary Prosecco. And I was like, thank you, girl. But yeah, it was a good ass time. And then snuck into a couple of other, I wouldn't even say, listen, when you belong somewhere, you move like you belong somewhere. So I don't really sneak into a party. I was like, I belong at this party too. So we going over there. I didn't buy no ticket, but that's cool. We're going to find a way inside. And so that happened too. And it was a good time being able to connect and be in community with other Black folks. So like I said, if you've never been to CBC weekend, if you are curious about popping out for a CBC weekend, I highly encourage you to you know, do your research and figure out if that works for you and pull up next year, because I'm already manifesting. I'm going to be on one of them stages next year. I'm going to be talking about something. Somebody going to have me over at CBC doing something. I don't know what quite yet. I don't know how I'm going to make it happen. But once a Capricorn make their mind up, shit just, it happens. That determination, that shit going to fall into place. So those are our updates. Now let's really get into Earth This Ghetto. And we have to start with Chimp Crazy. And so I've talked about it briefly on a couple of other episodes about Chimp Crazy on HBO Max, or Max, whatever they call HBO these days. And if you have not had a chance to watch this four-part docuseries from the producers and directors of Tiger King, I want to once again highly encourage you to tap into all of the white mess. Because if we recall and we kind of sit with our memories and flash back to those golden years of COVID, when Tiger King had us all captivated and in community with each other, really trying to figure out what in the entire hell was going on with Joe Exotica and his legion of young white men that he had hooked on meth and a good time and tigers. Just think about that energy, but no meth. No, Joe Exotica, but Tanya. Tanya's our protagonist, our main character throughout this docuseries. And I'm gonna tell you something. Tanya had me on a ride, because I had the moments of watching her go through her story from her, you know, her son being introduced into the plot of him even saying like, "Hey, my mom loves these chimps more than she loves her own kids," to Tanya, you know, going through her own traumas and loss, and then her getting wrapped up in this world of exotic animal trade and caring for primates and raising these primates and, you know, these monkeys like they're children, literally like babies. And then her having a dream of wanting to open up a zoo. All type of shit was going on with Tanya, but it was really hard to stay focused and compassionate for Tanya because she looked a mess. She looked an absolute mess. And so if you need a visual, you could pause this or you do the same time as you listening to me, go Google Tanya from Chimp Crazy. You're gonna see what I'm talking about because she's somewhere in between old girl who died in that plane crash with her lover that she left her husband for, all the way down, Glenn, whatever her name was. Y'all know what I'm talking about. The lady with the big hair from the other HBO documentary. I think it was called The Way Down. What was her name? Hold on. The Way Down, that docuseries about the Remnant Fellowship Church with Gwen Chamberlain. So Tanya is look sort of like Gwen, talking about that hair, be doing some things. The difference though is Tanya had these wigs and they weren't no bust down wigs. It was just like, oh, you might have got those from a beauty supply store or Amazon, but not the good section of the beauty supply store or from like Love Me, where you can get a really nice wig. If you need a wig plug, Love Me, LUVME, Love Me, top notch. I ain't never had no wig, but I know plenty of folks who go to Love Me and they be looking sharp. But Tanya was so distracted because her skin was a color that was is not natural to white people. You could, you know, they showed her tanning, they showed her getting lip fillers, they showed her getting her, I think her eyebrows blade or lasered. I don't listen. Let me get to the point. The point is, this world is not safe with humans in it. That's the ultimate point. The world is not safe with humans in it. Because what the entire hell? They told a couple of different stories in Chimp Crazy about, you know, chimpanzees that had attacked their owners or their caregivers after being kept in captivity outside of a natural habitat, locked in cages, locked in the homes, being walked around on a leash, being forced to perform tricks. Being forced to sit in front of the TV, be shit, being forced fed Happy Meals. These women, because it was primarily women who are in caregiving roles of these chimpanzees because they use them as replacement children. So they're raising them from babies up until like they damn near my age, like 36 to 40-year-old chimpanzees or whatever. And they feeding them chimpanzees donuts, chicken nuggets, Happy Meals, giving them sodas and shit, and then wonder why they got high blood pressure and diabetes and they dying. Girl, you are feeding the animal things it should not be eating, number one. And then you're wondering why they turn up getting heart attacks and shit or gnawing your goddamn face off. Because that happened a couple of times in the stories that they told. And I'm going to tell you something. Every single human that got gnawed or attacked by one of these chimps, fully deserving. Because why the hell you got them locked up in your house in Ohio? Why you got them locked up in cages in Missouri? Why? Because even with Tanya's ass, the whole plot of her story was she stole the goddamn chimp. She stole Tonka because the people came and took all her animals away from her. They had like 40-something chips on some sanctuary that won't really know sanctuary. And PETA, a big boss thug, if you didn't know, PETA is a gangster. PETA is a gangster. Talking about the animal rights organization, PETA, they are a gangster. They pulled up and said, "Oh, nah, Tawny, we ain't doing this shit. Run me them monkeys." And they went and put all them monkeys up in the trailer after sedating them and took them to some sanctuary. But come to find out, one monkey was missing. Lo and behold, Tanya then took this monkey across several state lines, kidnapped Tonka, and had his ass in the basement of her house in Missouri. Tonka getting fed Happy Meals, donuts, his hair falling off, he depressed. And she, "Oh no, this is how he is. We love each other. This is my baby. This is my best friend." Tanya is in court fighting with PETA about like, where is Tonka? Because they didn't launch the whole investigation with awards assigned to, like, if you can find the monkey, we'll give you a couple $1,000. Tanya all in the court proceedings crying. I don't know. Tonka's dead. He's dead. He's dead. Here are his ashes. He's dead. I don't have him anymore. Bitch, you are full of shit. That monkey won't dead. Those were not that monkey's ashes. That monkey was in the basement. And you sitting up here lying to the court. And y'all, come to find out yet again, because there's no other way a black person could tell the story without saying, come to find out. Come to find out, the director and producer of Chimp Crazy got so concerned that Tanya was going to euthanize Tonka that he became a snitch. A snitch and a rat. And if you don't know the definition of, like, between a snitch and a rat, if you ever listen to 21 Savage, Savage Mode 2, Morgan Freeman does a whole narration of defining, you know, the difference between a snitch and a rat before snitches and rats starts to play on the album. And essentially, a snitch and a rat is somebody who is already complicit in the crime. You've agreed to do this shit. You knew what was going down. You knew what we was about to do. And then all of a sudden you turn on the other side. Like, wait a minute, bitch. We went into this together. So now you want to go tell somebody and be righteous? And so the producer and the executive producer is a snitch because he went and turned Tanya in and was like, yo, we know where the monkey at. He in the basement. Y'all need to come get the monkey. I said, well, ain't this about a bitch? Let me fast forward the story though. And so they end up rescuing Tonka. Tanya loses all rights to seeing the monkey. They take the monkey out to some sanctuary. The sanctuary looked beautiful. It had islands and like 45 different habitats. And, you know, the white folks was taking good care of the monkeys, I guess, because I guess they can't take care of them goddamn selves. I don't know. But Tanya loses all rights to seeing Tonka. The white man who did one movie with Tonka felt, you know, validated that he saved the monkey's life. He crying and shit, talking about I had a special connection with that monkey when we did a movie together. That monkey won't give, I don't give a damn about you. He want to be free in the world. Y'all got him putting on suits and doing tricks and shit and giving him cookies. That's not the life he chose. The world is not safe with humans in it. Bottom line, we out here just messing up the whole ecological structure of this place. The world ain't safe with us in it. It's just not. It's just not. So the short of it, if you want to go see for yourself what Chimp Crazy was about, if you want to see Tanya in her wigs and her deeply, deeply darkened skin, her lip fillers and her foolishness, her hysterics, if you, I ain't never seen no white woman cry on cue like that. Then the type of white tears that get black bodies up out of here. So if you want to go witness this for yourself, just go ahead and watch Chimp Crazy on HBO Max. And I'm also going to manifest. Somebody's going to give me a podcast production deal to do these recaps of these docuseries and shows about white mess, because it's only right. Let's move into some other white mess while I have your attention. So the last two days this week, I attended this gun violence conference in my city, because that's, you know, that's one of the worlds that I've been in and out of in this work, is gun violence prevention and intervention. Specifically for like 18 to 24, I mean, well, 10 to 24 year olds, and then communities and families. I've been doing that work since 2016. So I went to this gun violence prevention that's put on by a local nonprofit here. I was already hesitant to attend the conference because when I tell you this was cop heavy in terms of the marketing, the speakers, the topics, everything super cop heavy. But then I also have to remind myself of where I'm situated in the work, right? Like, I'm in Richmond, Virginia, the capital of the Confederacy, the top of the South, the bottom of the North. Like, there's a lot of dynamics at play in Richmond. Like, Richmond is controlled politically and socially by a black class, but economically, cotton and tobacco money still are all through this shit. And so a lot of those dynamics come into play when we think about just community violence, violence prevention, gun, all, you know, who is kind of at the core of, you know, experiencing the greatest harm at the hands of like community violence or just weapons in neighborhoods. And so I knew it was just important for me and the organization that I work with full time to be present for this conference, because even though we take a abolitionist and liberatory lens to the work, I am pragmatic. I understand how this shit go. Meaning there are just some folks that you have to work with in order to get closer to what you're trying to achieve. And I am someone of the mindset, I can work with damn near anybody to find consensus and figure some solution out. And so I went to the conference. I lasted the first day. The first day was rough. It was a lot of, like I said, copaganda in the space, a lot of just centering police as superheroes and the heroes of our community. And we have to support them more, give them the resources they need because they keep us all safe. And we all, people who see this differently, know that police don't keep anyone safe. We keep each other safe. Police respond after some shit already went down. Like, it is very rare that police actually prevent crime from happening. We, people in community with each other, we prevent crime from happening. Police do not. Anyways, the second day of the conference, I ultimately had to tap out after the lunchtime speaker because I said, this man is nuts. Like, he is on some power trip bullshit that I have not heard in a very long time. And he has a very large platform. He's actually a local news anchor here in Richmond. They had John Burkett from WTR CBS 6 do like a lunchtime talk. And I couldn't even tell you what the purpose of his talk was, because it really just kind of turned into a rant along with just some poverty and pain pimping when he brought up a gentleman who had his son, I believe, die from gun violence. And, you know, let me just start with, actually, let me get that out the way. So the person that John brought up, you know, he was talking about a story of his son being taken from him through gun violence. And he was pleading to the audience, if you see something, say something. If you see something, say something. He's crying. He's sharing his story, his confusion, his pain, his everything. And the whole time I'm sitting there, I'm like, why have they put this man and his wife through this shit? This is not the see something, say something audience. This is an audience full of quote unquote professionals in the work. It's an audience full of cops and sheriffs and community providers and people that engage directly in the work, from policy to direct service to intervention to credible messengers. This is not the see something, say something group. Why they got this man up here reliving his pain and his trauma in front of us, crying and pleading for his son's killer to be brought to justice? And that is not necessary. Like, having him actively in his pain right now was a result of the power of John Burkett and these conference organizers. I said, this is fucked up. That's my first F-bomb of the episode, I believe. But this is messed up. Second to that, John Burkett gets on this rant. And keep in mind, like, he has shown, he's telling stories about, like, the way he gets DMs or messages on Facebook that, like, show pictures. He showed a picture of a young Black boy, and he had that thing on him, had that tool on him. And they're just kind of, you know, going back and forth in terms of, like, somebody's up next to get shot. Because we all know a lot of the shooting that happens in communities that I serve and live in is retaliation, right? You did something to me, to us. We do something to you, to y'all. Like, it's very rare that it's some random, I'm breaking in a random house to go see what, you know, see what it's about. I'm coming to you because you did some shit to me and my people. I'm coming to get street justice. We solve crimes. Police don't solve the crimes. And so he's showing, like, he gets messages from folks, and he showed, you know, a young Black boy with that thing on him, that tool, that blicky. And he, you know, he goes into this rant about how, I don't know what's going on with parents in these days, but, you know, parents got to go back to being their parents and not their kids' friends. We got to go back to, you know, scared straight. When I went to scared straight and somebody said something to me, I knew I didn't want to go to prison. I didn't want to go to jail. These kids need to be held accountable. These kids need to be made examples out of. Whole time, these kids. Image in my mind, because the image he framed his conversation around, Black kids, Black and brown bodies. He's talking about Black and brown bodies need to be held accountable, need to be made examples of. It's a white man, if you don't know. John Burkett is a white man. And as he's talking, all that I can think about is some of the most violent people to have ever touched this globe are white people, specifically white men. When you think about colonization, of imperialism, of capitalism, of supremacy, everything that whiteness has touched has brought destruction. And you know who is the least likely to be held accountable or made examples of? White men. When we talk about the violence of white men, the day we start holding white men accountable for their violence is the day we're gonna see shit change. And so, like, until we start doing that, we can't call for literally the systematic lynching of black and brown bodies when we're not calling for the accountability of all this white violence. We don't talk enough about white men and their violence across the globe. We just don't. But all roads lead back to them. Just think about it for a moment. Black and brown cultures, historically, are not violent cultures or people. This savage nature is a learned behavior. Who came and taught it? How did we gain access to how to do it? Colonization brought it to our land, brought it to our villages, brought it within our culture. We don't fucking do that. Protect? Absolutely. Defend? Absolutely. Senseless violence? Hell no. Only one type of culture is known to do that. And so I absolutely had to tap out of that conference after that moment because I said, this shit is nuts. Sitting up in here pointing the finger directly at people most proximate to pain, people dealing with the systematic oppression, the economic divestment and removal from their communities, their families being separated, low neighborhood attachment, families working, you know, three different jobs, one caregiver working three different jobs to care for four different kids across various different age groups. Like, pointing the finger everywhere but where it needs to be pointed, trying to hold everybody accountable, but who needs to be held accountable for this shit? And it's definitely not anybody in a black or brown body. Yeah, we got a role to play, but everything we do is a result of. Everything we do is a part of causality. It's a result of trying to survive. Listen. Listen, the day we start seeing things clearly for what they are and what they're not, who and what is at the root of a lot of the pain and the evil that is experienced, and calling it for what it is, we get a bit freer, man. But what I can't stand for is placing the blame where it does not belong, and it does not belong on the bodies of Black and brown people. It just don't. Not in a societal structure like we have in this Western world. It just does not belong on black and brown bodies. So we release that and we give it right back to those that are in power and control. And patriarchy, white supremacy, capitalism, colonialism, all of that created by and benefits white men of the owning class. So, I'm gonna move us along because we got a bit more earth that's got up to get through. I don't have too many words about Diddy, but I mean, you know, old boy's daddy won't lie when he said Roc Nation would crumble. Tory Lanez dad, yeah, he won't lie when he said Roc Nation would crumble. Yeah, Diddy can't, you know, he a part of Bad Boy, but all the word on the street is Bad Boy and Roc Nation got some. Diddly, you know, they was diddy and bopping together or something. I don't know what is going on, but I do know for a fact we can't make light of the situation. This is some really serious allegations. And beyond that, there are countless people who have known this to go on for decades and were complicit and were bystanders in the pain and exploitation of primarily women, from what I understand from the indictment. And so, you know, gonna pay attention. I want to send as much opportunity for those involved to, you know, drop back into their body and regain and reconnect with some sort of peace and comfort in knowing that there are so many people who are looking to surround them with love and care, even if it's not direct, but are, you know, not trying to make light of the situation, not trying to make any type of joke about what is going on, because I just keep thinking about Black women, and I'm a girl's girl. And so you fuck with one of us, you fuck with us all. And Diddy, you fucked with us, so fuck Diddy. And every single person that was complicit in the harm of Black women for decades. For real. For real. So I'm gonna leave it there. I have one more thing that I want to talk about, but I'm gonna save that for another episode, because I'm still trying to wrap my mind around it, because it's gonna be a deep. I don't like using that like hotep-y deep kind of word, but it's gonna be important conversation, I think, for me to have, for us to have together. But I'm gonna save that one for another episode. So let's go ahead and move into Tales from the Trap. I actually want to talk about how psychotherapy and clinical social work are not the same things. And the reason I want to talk about this is because, when I was up in DC for CBC weekend, I went to a Black clinicians meetup. And the majority of the folks who were at the meetup were, LPCs, LMFTs, people actively doing direct service, psychotherapy. And I'm just like, I don't do that shit. And I had made this comment of like, I'm a mediocre therapist. And they were like, no, you're not. What are you talking about? And I received the love. Give me the things back. Help me with a reframe. But what I was really trying to get at in that moment in our conversation is like, I could care less about doing psychotherapy. That is not where my skills lie. That's not where my passion exists. However, I am a damn good and highly skilled clinical social worker. I know that shit like the back of my hand. And it's taken me a while to be able to parse out and separate psychotherapy from clinical social work, because social media and these mental health influencers and these content creators are fusing the two together. And I want to do my part to like untwine them. Like, they got to be unbraided. They actually run parallel, but they don't go together. They are not one and the same. And so for me, the way I've come to understand this is like, clinical social work is broad, and it's more like it's like an umbrella term for all these different wonderful things that you can do as a clinical social worker. But clinical social work really focuses on like assessment and diagnosing and prevention and the treatment of mental and behavioral and emotional, mental illness, right? And clinical social work looks at a person in their environment. And if you did not know, the profession of social work was the one that introduced that to the world of mental health. Like, you can't just keep looking at an individual without looking at them in the context of their environment. So, like, that is one of the things we're known for as social workers. Everybody else took that shit from us. If you didn't know, look it up. I'm not lying to you. But like, clinical social work can be done in so many different settings. And so many people right now are stuck on believing that clinical social work is only done in private practice. And truth be told, that's the least place where clinical social work occurs. Clinical social work occurs in like a private practice, of course, hospitals, communities, schools, jails, mental health agencies, primary care. Like, we are everywhere. And psychotherapy, y'all, psychotherapy is the treatment of mental health. It is one form of treatment of mental health that's primarily done through verbal communication and interaction. So, psychotherapy is one form of treatment for mental health. Clinical social work is a practice that focuses on a variety of things: assessments, diagnosing, prevention, and treatment of mental illness. And there's so many ways to do those four things. There's so many ways, there's various ways to assess, right? To then help inform your didactic diagnosis, to then help inform the treatment of what you decide, kind of determine that is happening. But then what's really cool about us as clinical social workers is we also get to focus on prevention, meaning how do we even get in before we get to a place where shit goes bad? And I believe that's where many of us kind of get excited about the work. Yeah, we love the treatment component, but we like to do treatment in a variety of ways, and it isn't always through psychotherapy. I'm a huge proponent of, psychoeducation is my shit. Let's come in, let's get good information about what's going on with you, what's going on with these diagnoses that medical or mental health, behavioral, emotional, whatever's going on. Let's get good information. about what's going on. So then we can, you know, you have a better idea on when a trigger pops up or a memory resurfaces or you feel something in your body. Like you have things and information that you're armed with to work your way through it. And so I just want people in this work and people who are curious about this work to understand, like, every clinical social worker is not a psychotherapist. And every psychotherapist is not a clinical social worker. There are clinical social workers, licensed and unlicensed, that provide psychotherapy. And when I say unlicensed, I mean people who are working towards their own independent license. They provide psychotherapy, but they also do so much other stuff. And if you are one of those people who are coming into the field of social work to only do psychotherapy, social work is not for you. We assess, we diagnose, we prevent, and we treat through a variety of methods beyond just psychotherapy. You can literally treat some mental, behavioral, and emotional disorders by getting somebody some goddamn housing, a food voucher, and a bus ticket. Woo! Watch the psychosis go away if you get somebody sheltered. I'm just saying. And back on some medicine. Some care coordination, some case management, some triage, like on a PAC team, right? Oh, crisis intervention, acute care, IOP. Like, there's so many ways that we show up in this work. And so I had to get clear on what I do and what and how I do it well. And psychotherapy is not one of the things I do well. I know how to do it. I can suffer through, you know, doing psychotherapy. That's just not where my gifts are. That's not where my strengths are. And so I'm also bringing this up because I'm someone who was capable of providing clinical supervision to those that are seeking their social work license. And for a while, like I haven't done it in shit like 6 years, maybe like 5 or 6 years. Cause I felt insecure because so many people were coming to want to learn how to do psychotherapy. And I'm like, that's not what I do. However, we want to talk about like assessing and diagnosing and developing a treatment plan that is conducive to that individual that may or may not include connecting them to a psychotherapist. Maybe I could do that. And so I'm getting my confidence back to get back out there and do clinical supervision because I know I have so much to offer. And people could really learn a lot from being under my guidance as they work towards their license as a clinical social worker. But I just want to help people get real clear and stop, you know, weaving these two things together. Psychotherapy and clinical social work are not the same things. Psychotherapy is a treatment for mental health conditions. Clinical social work embodies so many things: assessing, diagnosing, treating, and preventing mental illness. So I'm going to leave that there. I don't have a story attached to it in terms of Tales from the Trap. I just have psychoeducation, honestly, just good information. Fact check me. Please fact check me. But I just want folks in the field and outside of the field to begin to understand these differences. When you're hearing people say, like, I'm a therapist. Okay. What kind? Because that's another issue that I'm taking with people in the field. Like, we have co-opted the word therapist, like other forms of therapy don't exist. Physical therapy, occupational therapy, like, come on, y'all. So you actually need to start saying you're a psychotherapist, or, you know, you need to start putting not the qualifier, but whatever the word is I'm looking for. You need to, like, be specific. What type of therapist are you? So that's my other plug for people in the work. Like, stop just saying you're a therapist. You know, you can say you're a licensed mental health professional, psychotherapist, something, but we can't co-opt and take therapists away from these other fields that also use the word and it's applicable to what they do. So that is my rant for the Tales from the Trap. And let's move into a good Black word. And a good Black word for the week is about being humble. Right? We, you know, this is a word that I think people are redefining their relationship with. I've seen it at least, and I know that I have over the last couple of years redefined my relationship with this word, humble or humility or just being humble. And what I've ultimately decided is being humble doesn't work for Black women. And so I stopped doing that shit like a year and a half ago. Like, being humble does not work, because if you look up the definition of humble, it's some real like what? Like, oh, I know you lying. Because if you look up the words, you're going to be like, oh, no, I got to let that go. That don't work for me. And so like humble is actually defined as having or showing modest or low estimate of your of one's own importance. So like being humble is not what people make it out to be. And I think we need to investigate our relationship with it. Because even like some of the synonyms or whatever that go along with it are low ranking, lower class, submissive, like all this shit that I have you like, oh, absolutely not. So lower in dignity or importance to other people or things. So I have decided that being humble does not work for Black women. You can apply this to your own life if it works for you. But being humble in many ways has caused people that I know and myself included to be made invisible, to have our work go unrecognized, to have credit taken away where credit should be due, to have us overlooked for opportunities, to have us not even considered for various opportunities that may come our way or have been spoken about around us. And so I really want to encourage people inside of Black bodies specifically to release this idea of being humble. Yes, we can be grateful. We can be honored. We can be, you know, whatever else words you want to use, but humble, we will not be anymore. We are not of low value. We are not of low estimate, low importance. We are of nothing low. And so we're going to release this idea of being humble. We can express gratitude all day long, because that I always have. I have gratitude when I am thought of, when I am included, when I am considered, when I am quoted, when I am whatever. I am grateful through and through. Humble, I am not, because I have worked really hard to amount this level of trust, of care, of protection, of admiration, right? And I'd have no desire to do anything to compromise that. But being humble will have me acting like I don't deserve the things that I have, you know, that I have, that I don't deserve the respect, that I don't deserve the admiration, that I don't deserve the opportunities, that I don't deserve the recognition, and all that is false. I deserve it all and more. So, humble, we will not be. We will not be. It does not work for us. So, I want to encourage you to let that shit go. And with that being said, that is all that I have this week. And as always, y'all, please remember to take care of your heart so that we can take care of each other, because we is all we got. And we will chat maybe next week. I'll let you know. We'll see. Y'all be well.